ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 29, talks between Narada and King Prachinavadi, text 30 and 31. Chut parito yatha dhina. Like to a dog's. By chance, A dog may have a very rich owner, and by chance, he may become a street dog. As the dog of a rich man, he will live very opulently. Sometimes in Western countries, we hear of a master leaving millions of dollars to a dog in his will. Of course, there are many dogs loitering in the street without food. Therefore, to liken the conditional existence of the living entity to that of a dog is very appropriate. An intelligent human being, however, can understand that if he has to live the life of a dog, he had best become Krishna's dog. In the material world, a dog is sometimes elevated and is sometimes on the street, but in the spiritual world, Krishna's dog is perpetually, eternally happy. Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur has therefore sung Vaishnava Kaur Tumara Kukura Balaya Janaha Mori. In this way, Bhaktivinoda Kaur offers to become a Vaishnava's dog. A dog always keeps himself at his master's door and does not allow any person unfavorable to the master to enter. Similarly, one should engage in the service of a Vaishnava and try to please him in every respect. Unless one does so, he does not make spiritual advancement. Apart from spiritual advancement, in the material world, if one does not develop his qualities in goodness, he cannot be promoted to the higher planetary system, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 14.18. Urdvam vichanti sattasta madhye tishtanti rajasa chaghanya gunavritishta adho vichanti tamasa. Those situated in the mode of goodness gradually go upward to the higher planets. Those in the mode of passion live on the earthly planets, and those in the mode of ignorance go down to the hellish worlds. There are many varieties of life in different planetary systems, and these come about due to the living entities developing his qualities in goodness, passion, and ignorance. If one is in goodness, he is promoted to the higher systems. If in passion, he remains in the middle systems. And if in ignorance, he is pushed down to the lower species of life. So this verse, of course, especially as we've seen in the last part of Srila Prabhupada's paragraph, this section with Radha Muni is again explaining the topics of the nature of the living entity's conditional life in this material world, and how the living entity can become disentangled and go back to the spiritual world and enjoy life eternally there. So these topics are being described, and the last few verses are explaining how the living entity is in under the modes of material nature, sattva, tamas, and rajas, is taking birth in different species of life, in higher positions, middle positions, or lower positions. So, this in the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna describes the modes of material nature, so in the 13th chapter, he describes how the living entity comes in contact with the modes of material nature and becomes conditioned by them. And that was that verse of Bhagavad Gita was mentioned a few verses ago, that verse of Bhagavad Gita. And then in that 13th chapter, we see one becomes conditioned by associating with the material nature. Then in the 14th chapter, Krishna speaks about the motives of material nature in more detail. And he says this to Arjuna in the first verse, in the 14th chapter, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "Again, I shall declare to you this supreme wisdom, the best of all knowledge, knowing which all the sages have attained the supreme destination." So, he says, by becoming fixed in this knowledge, one can attain to the transcendental nature like my own. Thus established, one is not born at the time of creation or disturbed at the time of dissolution. So this, here Krishna is describing the best of knowledge. In other words, he's giving Arjuna, as explained in the Bhagavad Gita, in the purport, that Prabhupada says, the knowledge explained in this chapter is proclaimed by the Supreme Lord to be superior to the knowledge given so far in other chapters. By understanding this knowledge, various great sages attain perfection and transfer to the spiritual world. The Lord now explains the same knowledge in a better way. And this knowledge is far, far superior to all other processes of knowledge thus far explained. And knowing this, many attain perfection. So, sometimes when we hear these topics about the modes of material nature, in one sense, it's easy to make the mistake that we're hearing something inferior. But actually, Krishna's saying the reverse. Because in the Bhagavad Gita, we see that Krishna has explained that he has different energies. He has the material energy, that is his energy, which he is controlling. There's the marginal energy, which is the living entities, you or I. And that he himself is the personality of Godhead, the cause of everything material and spiritual. So then, here, he's giving greater detail of the nature of his material energy. previously, he's also explained about his different opulences in the 10th canto, the 10th chapter. And he's also revealed his universal form in the 11th chapter. So we have discussed the different energies of the Lord in principle, and when we come to this chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the 14th chapter, he's explaining exactly how the material energy works. That's more detailed knowledge. He's explaining the same thing, but going into it with more detail and expanding upon it. And it's discussing how. So this is very, the point is, it's very, very confidential knowledge. And although it's a basic understanding for most devotees, it's very hard to discuss these things with non-devotees. So, in previous verses, it's describing how someone may take birth in a position where they're a higher position, and someone takes birth in a lower position, and someone may be somewhat in between. So, in this world, you can't say to someone that this person is higher and this person is lower without offending everyone, isn't it? See? So, even just that basic understanding, you have to take a step back and understand that you know, that's just unacceptable. In fact, generally, when people who are, many people who don't like religious topics, there's a common, you know, thing that they will all say is that, who is this person who dares to tell me what choices I can make? Yeah. That's a, so that really offends them. They're really offended by it. You know, how dare you, when you have your faith, tell me what I can eat, you know, what sort of work I will do, what sort of sexual behaviour I will have. And so in other words, if you make an attempt to classify anything in this world, something is better than what another person is doing, then you have a problem. But actually, you know, the material energy works according to that nature. I was having a chat with one of my daughters yesterday, who she works in critical care in Royal Melbourne Hospital, and of course, and her partner is a doctor, but so of course they often have discussions. He's from an Orthodox Christian background, and she's a Hare Krishna. And so because a lot of people ask her, how do we discuss this situation in the world? Because, you know, what do you say to people? You know, you can't bring up religion, and you can't, you know, say that someone is doing something wrong like that. But actually, every Prabhupada put, you know, we can put it in a very simple term, that, you know, Prabhupada says everything in this world can be categorized into three. Something is good or correct, something is bad, and something is good or bad. So no one can deny that. So for instance, you know, if someone is in the they have orchards and they grow oranges. So there are people who know that there are certain better trees than others, give more juicy fruits, you know, and certain soils which are superior and certain soils which are inferior. And then there are certain climates which are superior and certain climates which are inferior. So it's just common sense, and they will tell you straight out that, you know, if you want to grow good oranges, nice and juicy, in abundance, these are the superior things, these are inferior, and these are a bit of a mixture. This is okay, it's got some of this. If someone wants to go for a swim, they have the lifeguards here. The lifeguards put up flags. This is a superior place to swim. It's safe. It's fun. This is an inferior place. And this is a little bit in between. The other way you've got the rib. Okay. So actually, the whole world functions actually according to this principle, that in this material world, the material energy has three divisions. Good, bad, and mixed, you know, superior, inferior, and in between. And a person, and the distinguishing factor for humans is to actually have knowledge of these things, and to use that knowledge, the discrimination,
and to make a choice between the best superior aspect to utilize for what one is trying to do. And the same goes for food. You know, if you therefore we have the World Health Organization, we have the national, we have health inspectors in every restaurant, the markets and things like that. So they will tell you that this certain types of food prepared in certain ways and in certain conditions may have more prevalence to bacteria and what have you, and others very, very clean, very unlikely, highly unlikely that you'll get ill from eating food. So people, anyone who handles food, throughout the world, they basically have to have some sort of food handlers training. If they're cutting their vegetables, they cut the vegetables on one chopping board, and then if you're cutting something else, you chop on another chopping board, and something different rules. So certain practices are superior, certain practices are inferior, some are mixed, and if you get the inferior, then there's a problem. And if you do the superior, you don't have a problem. So the Bhagavad Gita is confirming what everyone knows, but if sometimes someone wants to do something, they have a particular strong material desire, strong desire to do something, then sometimes they will disregard, all common sense as to what is good and what is not so good. They'll disregard that and say, how dare you tell me what I can do? So it's a very, and here, what happens, of course, is that on a very high level, if we can perceive that aspect of the material energy, we can try and follow that aspect of associating with material energy in such a way that we don't get these harsh reactions by nature. So therefore, even governments. Governments also can rule in a superior way. They can rule in an inferior way, or they can be in a perfect mixture. When governments rule in a superior way, they look after the citizens not as objects for exploitation for a few, very, very ambitious, sometimes very greedy people. So there's a certain percentage, I think, something like half the wealth of the world is, owned by 1 or 2% of the world, about 3% of the world's population, something like that. So a government can rule like that, where most of the world goes without, and a few percent have more than what they need. So that's one way of doing it. Another way to rule is that, just like, so imagine running a family like that. You've got one child that you're feeding. They always eat very nice. Another child, you don't care whether they eat or not, they have to sort of eat the scraps. And, it just wouldn't happen. Proper parenting means that you look after each of the children. And it doesn't matter that, sometimes one child may not be very highly intelligent or qualified. They may be, have a lot of challenges in life. Yeah, health problems. the parents make sure they get equal food according to them and what they require, nice places and like that. So of course, you know, good government is like that. It's supposed to be like the father or the mother, and they look after the citizens in a superior way where everyone's interests are looked after properly. Good government would mean that they not only look after the people, but they look after the planet. So the rivers, the air, the land, to make sure that, you know, because a bad government, if they destroy the country, literally if they destroy their own rivers, that's not very, you know, they make a lot of good wealth for a very few people who may then go and live in places where there are nice flowing rivers in another country, whereas the people who have been exploited, I think that was mentioned, you know, talking about capitalism in the previous verse. So, so actually governments, you know, that also, you know, why do people vote the next government in? Why do they kick a government out? Because they consider this government is inferior, we want them to go, and we want a superior government in. So actually in government, you know, people acknowledge that one will be superior, one will be inferior. So in America, you know, they've got those are coming up to elections, and they're considering, do we keep the current person as superior, or do we put someone in who's superior? So that you know, so it goes without saying that in government, not that anything anyone does is acceptable. So, and actually, as governments are very, you know, we have the system of democracy. Democracy, very good, gives a lot of, you know, freedoms. There are also inherent problems that, as we discussed before, if you do have a population of people who don't consider what is proper, but just want to act for their senses. I want to do this, I want to have that, I don't care what happens to the planet, I don't care what happens to this or the other, but if we all vote in numbers, we'll get the government in and they'll let us do it. So the problem with democracy is that they, you know, it has many benefits, but one of the problems is that sometimes they cater to people who don't know what's best for them. The reason we have a government anywhere in the world is because everyone needs to follow those who know what is best and give what is best to people. Otherwise, why have a government? So the very principle of government is that we're actually able to get the best. So, you know, that is an inherent problem. And therefore, the governments of the world, it is their duty to understand what is superior, what is inferior, and also what is the nature of, you know, what the people in their country desire. And without being, you know, very too harsh on the citizens, but to somehow lovingly guide them in the same way that parents. And the parents, they don't, well, they shouldn't, let's hope they don't, but they don't beat their kids. You know, like, you eat your broccoli, oh, get the stick, bang, 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 you know, eat broccoli, you know, oh, you know. So, you know, lovingly. And what they do, of course, is that by their own example, so you see in the Bhagavad Gita, in the third chapter, the Krishna says that verse 21, whatever action great man performs, common men will follow, and whatever standards he sets by exemplary acts, all the world pursues. And the purport, very nice, Prabhupada says that people in general always require a leader who can teach the public by practical behavior. A leader cannot teach the public to stop smoking if he himself smokes. I remember as a, and this is also one of the difficulties, is that sometimes in a democracy, if people have very short-term wants, good economics, and not much more than that, they don't particularly care about the bad habits of the leader. If they're going to give you good economics, they will vote that person in because they have some ability to deal with money. Problem is, if they have bad habits, people will follow, because people do follow. Maybe one of our previous politicians, who was, I won't mention his name, but one of the most popular politicians in the whole history of leaders, prime ministers, but he was a great drinker. He was a real Aussie. Loved to drink. He drank a huge amount of alcohol. So people thought, well, you know, so that was encouraging. Yeah, I'm just like the Prime Minister. He drinks, I drink, that. So we're just, you know, I'm a normal bloke, just like the leader. Don't tell me I've had too many drinks. The Prime Minister. Unfortunately, it only came out after he passed away. There was some terrible secrets, some very bad behaviour. In which now he is one of the most unpopular prime ministers. But because sometimes what happens when people drink from the intoxication, they make some very bad mistakes, which he did. So, but as Prabhupada says here, a leader cannot teach the public to stop smoking if he himself smokes. Lord Chaitanya said that a teacher should behave properly before he begins teaching. One who teaches in that way is called the acharya, or the ideal teacher. Therefore, a teacher must follow the principles of shastra, scripture, to teach the common man. Now, when Prabhupada mentions shastra here, in some of his different lectures, you know, he also refers to the law books of society as shastra. So when you know, he was saying, you know, the leaders must follow the principles of shastra. We have codes of law and ethics that leaders, politicians must follow. Persons appointed in authority by politicians must follow. That is shastra. They must follow that. Just like recently one politician, he had to resign because the lockdown laws meant that in New South Wales you couldn't go, even if you had a holiday home, you actually couldn't even go there. In some states you can, but in that state you couldn't, and he was going there, and he got caught. And that was very bad, because then other people would lose faith, and then of course they would do that, and then people's lives are at risk at that. The teacher cannot manufacture rules against the principles of revealed scriptures or the shastra. So every society has codes of books which define this is proper in our society and this is not. And the leaders have to abide by what is considered. And there are many, many generations, this is proper, this is not. They have to abide by that. But also, we're very fortunate that we have scriptures like the Bhagavad Gita, which not only deal with the moral principles of this world, but also deal with the karmic principles of the personality of Godhead. The revealed scriptures like Manusamhita and similar others are considered the standard books to be followed by human society. Thus, the leader's teaching should be based on the principles of such shastras. One who desires to improve himself must follow the standard rules as they have practice by the great teachers. Right? So if one wants to improve the orange orchard, they have to follow the principles laid down. How you get good oranges. If someone wants to follow good hygiene, they have to follow the principles laid down in order to get that. If one wants to follow principles and avoid destroying the planet as they go about their business, one has to follow certain rules like that. The Srimad Bhagavatam also affirms that one should follow in the footsteps of great devotees, and that is the way of progress on the path of spiritual realization. And similarly, if one wants to become spiritually elevated, one must follow the rules and regulations of the scriptures for spiritual life. The king or the executive head of the state, the father and the school teacher are all considered to be natural leaders of the innocent people in general. All such natural leaders have a great responsibility to the dependents, therefore they must be conversant with the standard books of moral scriptural codes. So that is accepted all throughout the world. And still, if you approach the average person on the street who's perhaps not, you know, on some, if they're more acting according to their own, you know, what I want in my life, if you, you know, there's a lot of them, but if you approach them and you say, this is an inferior way of doing things. Oh, how dare you tell me what I can and can't do? And yet the whole world doesn't function like that. The whole world functions exactly according to what's stated here in the Bhagavad Gita. We follow exactly the same principles that are followed throughout the whole world for time immemorial, as long as you can go back in history. And yet, strangely enough, the general population still has the view that, and this is where, if someone is a leader and they're living by this code, well, who can tell me what I can do? You know, I have ultimate authority. I can do what I want to do. If they're living by that code, then it filters down right down to the, you know, people in public. Oh, well, I don't know what to do. So, and of course that's one of the problems with democracy is that sometimes if you have a vast majority of people who are, you know, interested in very short, limited desires based around, you know, that I'll get this thing to eat, I'll be able to have this sort of intoxication, I'll get to have this sort of a sex life, this sort of a house. And, there's some, entertainment, things like that. If there's somewhat of a limited, then they can actually vote in that person, a leader can take that position very easily and supply that to the person, and both the leader and the people in general can actually have this attitude that, you know, we're just, you know, who can tell us what we can do at that? So then, and then it becomes a problem. It's interesting what Prabhupada said in the previous verse, that both the wealthy person and those who control many of the capitalist societies of the world and exploit people for, you know, capitalism, for profit, they and the workers are both capitalists. So I'm not saying there's anything wrong with capitalism, as mentioned here, what Krishna says, he says that I was trying to repeat it. So, of course, Krishna, we speak of the Supreme Personality of God. We can call Krishna by many different names. Allah is the same person. Jehovah, different name, same person. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he says, there is no work prescribed for me within all the three planetary systems. So God has no work, he has nothing, no work to do to gain something. Nor am I in want of anything, nor am I in need to obtain anything, and yet I am engaged in prescribed duties. So we see that the Lord or his representatives, they all engage in activities very conducive to that people could follow their example. And further on in the Bhagavad Gita, expanding on the same principle, verse 25, the chapter says, as the ignorant perform their duties without attachment to results, the learned may simply act, but without attachment for the sake of leading people on the right path. So as not to disrupt the minds of ignorant men, attached with fruited results of prescribed duties, a learned person should not induce them to stop work. Rather, by working in spiritual devotion, you should engage in all sorts of activities for the gradual development of Krishna consciousness. So, the leaders understand that many people may be working, you know, just like a dog. A dog, generally, people know if you take in a dog, that dog is mostly acting for its own benefit. I will eat this. And you can't, you know, ask them to be vegetarian, so sometimes they do. But, you know, they like a bit of meat and a bit of this and a bit of that. And, you know, they have their own standard of toiletry habits and, you know, cleanliness and what have you. So, you can't stop a dog from being a dog, but the master guides the dog as to, okay, there are certain things you can do as a dog, and there are certain things it's not going to happen. When I was on the farm, I had a dog called Harry Dust. Spiritual joke. I called him Paradise because if he was not going to do the right thing, I was going to beat him in 22 marketplaces. No. But actually, you know, as a little pup, the first time I saw him go to Chola, I sort of got, you know, you get a newspaper just waking on the nose. It doesn't hurt him, but it sort of bowed. And from that time, I never ever saw him pass water or pass door anywhere. In the entire time I had the dog, he would, you know, I never even saw him. He would disappear and then he would do his visit. You'd never see him. And if I walked all around the farm, I still didn't even see where he'd been. So, and, you know, again, I trained not to come inside. So even if you left the door open and you weren't there and there was food right in that doorstep, he wouldn't enter that room. But there were certain things he used to love to chase cars and the bikes that used to go along the side track. You couldn't stop. There was nothing you could do because he was he loved chasing cars. He lived for it. In fact, he was so, you know, his consciousness was so fixed on that, he would sometimes bark, and that meant in 5 minutes a car was going to come. So it's like about 5 minutes later, the car came down, and then it hadn't even entered the property yet, it would come. And as soon as it sort of, you know, started coming in, he'd run up and then he would race that car until it stopped. But he didn't follow behind, he raced in front of it. It was a very fast dog. And he would just run all day. From morning to night, he'd run. So you couldn't stop him. You know, but, and he was a particular type of dog, so border collie. Yeah. So, you know, border collies, if you want to, you know, live in a little flat in the city, don't get a border collie. They'll go crazy. They need acres and acres to run like that. That's why they make the sheepdog. So anyway, even what happened was, he was chasing a biker then, you know, motorbike, they go through the bushes there, and they broke his leg. We had to get his leg amputated. So he got out, he got healed, I thought, okay, straight out there again. Right, within a week, and then he broke the toes on his other foot. So there were certain things you couldn't stop, and certain things you could. So, because he's a dog, after all. So, you know, the governments of the world, they understand. There's some people, they actually very addicted to things which are very inferior. There's some things, you know, the governments also understand that there's, you know, certain persons are very elevated in their consciousness, and the government has to also cater for that. And then there's some mixtures. So therefore they have, you know, rules and regulations according to the standard books of law and morality and you know, religion, by which everyone is capable for, but by which things go on properly. So for instance, you know, because in our home, because we have deities to the Lord, where we offer foods to the Lord, and everything has to be very, very clean, and it's considered even if an animal or a bird looks at that food, you can't offer it. You know, it has to be just purely for the purpose of the Lord, untainted even by the sight of anyone who looks at that food and says, this is for my enjoyment. So of course, you know, in order for things to go on properly, at the highest level, for those who want to take care of it, then things have to be organised even for those on the lowest level. That there's a certain limit of what's going to happen. I've actually seen in the devotee's house where they had a labyrinth. I was sitting having a chat with them, and they cooked an offering, and you know, there's a bunch of kids in that, they're all talking, and so while I was sitting there, and everyone was distracted, they put the offering on the altar, and the dog just went and started eating from the offering box. So, you know, there's certain limits. You can't, in other words, people who are following something which is, you know, done with great discrimination, people who don't have that discrimination should not be allowed by the governments. Okay, they may suffer some problems, but it should not be able to evade society, and especially those who are not, you know, who are acting with a very high discrimination. So, therefore, but when persons do behave in such a way that they have very little discrimination or mixed discrimination, one way or another, the living entity in the spiritual world, the living entity acts according to the nature of the soul in the presence of the personality of Godhead, and everything is completely pure and wonderful, spotless and transcendent, without even any taint of the material modes, even sattva. But when the living entity comes into this world, it's interesting here, you know, Prabhupada in one sense is saying by chance, you know, the dog will have a rich owner, by chance the dog will have a, not get food at all. So Prabhupada's bringing this point of chance, and that again is a common conception around the world, that by chance
you were born here, by chance someone else was born here, they're very fortunate, they're unfortunate, it's just by chance, there's nothing else to it, therefore no one's at fault for where they are. Now when Prabhupada mentions chance, what he's, of course we understand, that understanding the mother's material nature, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, 14th chapter, all the living entities are, you know, the Lord places them into the material energy because we living entities want to enjoy particular material desires independent of God. And therefore he gives us that facility and also gives us the facility to come back to our senses through transcendental knowledge and go back to the spiritual world. But while we're, and therefore according to our particular desires, which we're responsible for, and our particular activities, which we're responsible for the ramifications, we take birth in certain types of bodies. While we're in those bodies, there's an element of chance. Because one may be destined to take birth in a certain body, and then while there, one may again, associate with the material energy and cultivate particular desires, which then determine the next body, along with which, and that adds to all the previous karma, and already the desires are already there, are going to accumulate in the next body, but then they've added some fresh desires and some fresh karma. So by chance, they didn't intend to do that, nor it may not have been destined. But there's a little, once you associate with material energy, you know, one can actually make things worse. Therefore, Prabhupada says make the best use of a bad bargain. And the example sometimes given is that if you purchase a ticket to go from, you know, Melbourne to New York, so your, you know, destination is set. But while you're on that airplane, you can make some friends, have a chat with the person next to you, you meet some people that give you a business opportunity, oh, you're going to New York, come and look me up, end up with some nice business opportunity. You can do a silly prank and you're like, there's a bomb on the plane. And end up in jail. And end up in jail when you get to New York. So, you know, the destiny is there, but actually by chance, you know, all sorts of other things can change, you know, the usual course of events when you get to your destined destination. So there's a certain amount of destiny and there's a certain amount of chance or free will that is there within every living entity. And because of that, the spirit soul from the spiritual world ends up in one body to the next because they're associated with the material energy, and by chance, their desires and their activities create a particular body which is superior or inferior. And what Krishna says, and what all the scripture says, is that if we actually follow principles that elevate us and protect us from degradation, we will gradually elevate, and on the spiritual platform it is exactly the same, that if we follow principles of always striving for the most superior position, which is ultimately to not take birth again in this material world, where by chance, like a dog, sometimes good, sometimes bad, but we go back to the spiritual world, and in our spiritual body we actually live eternally with all the associates of the spiritual world in the presence of the personality of Godhead, and we enjoy eternal loving pastimes without any of the difficulties, birth, death, old age, and disease of this material world. So I'll just leave it there if anyone has any questions or comments. Prabhupada Gita.